today I'm going to read Chapter 5, Admetus, Part 1. It happened once that Zeus would punish Apollo, his son. He banished him from Olympus, and he made him put off his divinity and appear as a mortal man. And as mortal Apollo sought to earn his bread amongst men, he came to the house of King Admetus and took service with him as his herdsman. For a year Apollo served the young king, minding his herds of black cattle. Admetus did not know that it was one of the immortal gods who was in the house and in his fields, but he treated him in a friendly wise, and Apollo was happy whilst serving Admetus. Afterward, people wondered at Admetus' ever smiling face and ever radiant being. It was the gods' kindly thoughts of him that gave such happiness. And when Apollo was leaving his house and his fields, he revealed himself to Admetus and made a promise to him that when the god of the underworld sent death to him, he would have one more chance of baffling death than any mortal man. It was before Admetus sailed on the Argo with Jason and the companions of the quest. The companionship of Admetus brought happiness to many on the voyage, but the hero to whom it gave most happiness was Heracles. And often Heracles would have Admetus beside him to tell him about the radiant god Apollo, whose bow and arrows Heracles had been given. After that voyage, and after the hunt in Calydon, Admetus went back to his own land. There, he wed that fair, lovely, loving woman, Alcetes. He might not wed her until he had yoked lions and leopards to a chariot that drew her. This was a feat that no hero had been able to accomplish. With Apollo's aid, he accomplished it. Thereafter, Admetus, having a love for Alcetes, was even more happy than he had been before. One day, he walked by the fold through the pasture field. He saw a figure standing beside his herd of black cattle. A radiant figure it was, and Admetus knew that this was Apollo come to him again. He went toward the god, and he made reverence and began to speak with him. But Apollo turned to Admetus with a face that was without joy. "What years of happiness have been mine, O Apollo, through your friendship for me," said Admetus. "Ah, as I walked my pasture land today, I came to mind how much I love this green earth and blue sky, and all I know of love and happiness has come to me through you." But still Apollo stood before him with a face that was without joy. He spoke, and his voice was not clear and vibrant voice that he had and when speaking with Admetus. Admetus, he said, "It is for me to tell you that you may no more look on the blue sky nor walk on the green earth. It is to me to tell you that the god of the underworld will have you come to him. Admetus, know that even now God of the underworld is sending death to you, and the light of the world went out to Admetus, and he heard himself speaking to Apollo in a shaking voice. "Oh, Apollo, thou art a god. Surely you canst save me. Save me now from this death that the god of the underworld is sending for me." But Apollo said, "Long ago, Admetus, I made a bargain with the god of the underworld on thy behalf. Thou hast been given chance more than any other mortal man. If one will go willingly in thy place with death, thou canst still live on. Go, Admetus, thou art well loved, and it may be that thou wilt find one to take thy place. Then Apollo went up to the mountaintop, and Admetus stayed for a while beside the cattle. It seemed to him that a little of the darkness had lifted from the world. He would go to his palace. There were aged men and women there, servants and slaves, and one of them could surely be willing to take the king's place to go with death down to the underworld. So Admetus thought as he went toward his palace, and then he came upon an ancient woman who sat upon stones in the courtyard grinding corn between two stones. Long had she been doing that wearisome labor. Admetus had known her for the first time. He had come into that courtyard as a little child, and he had never seen aught in her face but heavy misery. She was sitting as he had first known her, her eyes blared and her knees shaking, and with the dust of the courtyard, the husks of the corn in her matted hair. He went to her and spoke to her and asked her to take the place of the king and go with death. But when she heard the name of death, horror came into the face of the ancient woman, and she cried out that she would not let death come near her. Then Admetus left her, and he came upon a sightless man who held up a shriveled hand for the foot that the servants of his palace might bestow upon him. Admetus took the man's shriveled hand, and he asked him that he would not take the king. That he would not take the king's place to go with death that was coming for him. The sightless man, with howls and shrieks, he said he would not go. Then Admetus went into the palace and into the chamber where the bed was his, and lay down upon the bed, and he lamented that he would have to go with death that was coming for him from the god of the underworld. He lamented that no one of the wretched ones around the palace would take his place. A hand was laid upon him. He looked up and he saw his tall, grave-eyed wife, Alcides, beside him. Alcides spoke to him slowly and gravely.
I have heard what you have said, O my husband," she said. "One should go in your place, and for you are king, you have so many great affairs to attend to. And if none other will go, I, Alcetes, will go in your place, Admetus."
It had seemed to Admetus that ever since he had heard the words of Apollo, and that heavy footsteps were coming toward him. Now the footsteps seemed to stop. It was not so terrible for him as before. He sprang up, and he took the hands of Alcetes and said, "You then will take my place?" "I will go to death in your place," Admetus, Alcetes said. Then even Admetus looked in her face, and he saw a pallor come up upon her. Her body weakened, and she sank down upon the bed. Then, watching over her, he knew that not he, but Alcetes, should go to death. And the words he had spoken, he would have taken back. The words that he had brought to her consent to go to death in his place. Paler and weaker Alcetes grew. Death would soon be here for her. No, not there, for he would not have death come into the place. He lifted Alcetes from the bed, and he carried her from the place. He carried her to the temple of the gods. He laid her there upon the bier and waited there beside her. No more speech came from her.
He went back to the palace, and all was silent. The servants moved about with heads bowed, lamenting silently for their mistress. As Admetus was coming back from the temple, he heard a great shout. He looked up and saw one standing at the palace doorway. He knew him by his lion skin and his great height. It was Heracles. Heracles had come to visit him, but at a sad hour. He could not now rejoice in the company of Heracles, and yet Heracles might be on his way to the accomplishment of some great labor, and it would not be the right word to say it that might turn him away from his doorway. He might have such need of rest and refreshment. Thinking this, Admetus went up to Heracles and took his hand and welcomed him into his house. "How is it with you, friend Admetus?" Heracles asked. Admetus would only say that nothing was happening in his house and that Heracles, his hero companion, was welcome there. His mind was upon a great sacrifice, he said, and so he would not be able to feast with him. The servants brought Heracles to the bath, and when he showed him where the feast was laid for him. And as for Admetus, he went within the chamber and knelt beside on the bed of which Alcides had lain, and thought of his terrible loss. Heracles, after the bath, put on brightly colored a tunic that servants of Admetus brought him. He put a wreath upon his head and sat down to the feast. It was a pity, he thought, that Admetus was not feasting with him. But this was only the first of many feasts. And thinking of what companionship he would have with Admetus, Heracles left the feasting hall and came to where the servants were standing about in silence. "Why is the house of Admetus so hushed today?" Heracles asked. "It's because of what is befalling, said one of the servants. "Ah, the sacrifice the king is making," said Heracles. "To what god is the sacrifice due?" "To the god of the underworld," said the servant. "Death is coming to Alcides, the queen, and where she lies on the bier of the temple of the gods. And then the servant told Heracles the story of how Alcides had taken her husband's place, going to stead with death. Heracles thought upon the sorrow of his friend and what a great sacrifice that his wife was making for him. Now, how noble it was of Admetus to bring him into his house to give entertainment to him while such a sorrow was upon him. And when Heracles felt that another labor was before him, "I have dragged up from the underworld," he thought, "the hand that guards whom death brings down into the realm of the god of the underworld. Why should I not strive with death?" That was a noble thing. It would be to bring back this faithful woman to her house and up and to her husband. "This is a labor that has not been laid upon me, and this labor I will undertake," so Heracles said to himself. He left the palace of Admetus and went to the temple of the gods. He stood inside the temple and he saw the bier on which Alcides had laid. He looked upon the queen. Death had not touched her yet, and although she lay so still and silent, Heracles went to watch beside her and strive with death for her. Heracles watched the death. Heracles watched, and death came. When death entered the temple, Heracles laid hands upon him. Death had never been gripped by mortal hands, and he strode on as if the grip meant nothing to him. But then he had to grip Heracles. In death's grip, there was strength beyond strength.
and upon Heracles a dreadful sense of loss came as death laid hands upon him, a sense of loss of life and loss of breath and loss of movement. But Heracles struggled with death a lot, although his breath went and his strength seemed to go from him. He held that stony body to him, and the cold of that body went to but that cold body went through him, and its stoniness seemed to turn his bones to stone. But still Heracles strove with him, and at last he overthrew him and held death down upon the ground. "Now you are held by me, death," cried Heracles. "You are held by me, and the god of the underworld will be made angry because you cannot go about his business, either this business or any other business. You are held by me, death, and you will not be let go unless you promise to go forth from this temple without bringing one with you." And death, knowing that Heracles would hold him there, and that business of the god of the underworld was to be left undone if he were beheld, promised that he would leave the temple without bringing one with him. Then Heracles took the grip off death, and that stony shape went from the temple. Soon a flush came into the face of Alcides as Heracles watched over her. Soon she arose from the bier on which she had been laid. She called out to Admetus, and Heracles went with her and spoke to her, telling her that he would bring her back to her husband's house. Admetus left the chamber where his wife had lain and stood before the door of his palace. Dawn was coming, and he looked toward the temple, and he saw Heracles coming to his palace. A woman came with him. She was veiled, and Admetus could not see her features. "Admetus," Heracles said when he came before him, "Admetus, there is something I would have you to do for me. Here is a woman who I am bringing you back to her husband. I want her from an enemy. Will you not take her into your house while I am away from a journey?" "You cannot ask me to do this, Heracles," Admetus. "No woman may come into my house where Alcides only yesterday had her life. For my sake, take her into her house," said Heracles. "Come now, Admetus, take this woman by the hand." A pang came to Admetus as he looked in the woman who stood beside Heracles, and he saw that she was the same stature as his lost wife. He thought that he could not bear to take her hand, but Heracles pleaded with him, and he took by the hand. "Now take her across your threshold, Admetus," said Heracles. Hardly could Admetus bear to do this. Hardly could he bear to think of a strange woman being in his house and his own wife gone with death. But Heracles pleaded with him by the hand, and he drew the woman across the threshold. "Now raise her veil, Admetus," said Heracles. "This I cannot do," said Heracles. "I have pangs enough. How can I look upon a woman's face and remind myself that I cannot look upon Alcides' face ever again?" "Raise her veil, Admetus," said Heracles. Then Admetus raised the veil of the woman, and he had taken across the threshold of his house. He saw the face of Alcides. He looked again upon his wife and thought back from the grip of death by Heracles and the son of Zeus. And then a deeper joy than he had ever known came to Admetus. Once more his wife was with him, and Admetus, the friend of Apollo and the friend of Heracles, and all that he cared to have. So that was chapter 5. Bye guys, see you later. See you later, see you later, see ya. See ya later. Bye guys.